What's going on, my lovable Lycan lovers? On this very special Valentine's edition of the Warp Reality Podcast, we talk about the lore of Valentine's Day. Edgegrave Dave reviews My Bloody Valentine. Chris Whitehouse shares some more crazy evidence his group caught. We delve into the lighter side of cryptids and much, much more. So let's climb aboard the love train and go to town.
Do aliens exist, and are they among us? Are weird creatures lurking in the darkness? Do evil entities hide in the shadows of your bedroom while you sleep? Join us as we explore all this and more on the Warped Reality Podcast.
Ah, yes, Valentine's Day, the holiday of love. Or is it? On this season 2, episode 31 of the Warped Reality Podcast, I, Ghost Joe, will explore with you the history, lore, creepiness, and bizarre aspects of this Hallmark holiday. But before we get into that, let's talk some paranormal news. So, a video just recently went viral on TikTok claiming some ghostly activity. A woman posted a video of security footage from her house that was aimed at her two dogs housed in separate crates. I don't understand why you would have security cameras just aiming at dogs that are in crates, but I don't know, maybe I'm just, I don't know, you tell me, you dog lovers, would you just watch your dogs in crates? Anyway, she posted this footage of her two dogs housed in separate crates. As she was watching it back, she noticed that the two pooches, who were quite vocal, suddenly became eerily silent. Then one of the dog's collars lifted off his head, startling him in the process. This video has reached over 1 million views and counting, and over 1,000 comments, both from believers to skeptics. I'll put a link of the video in the show notes so you guys can make the decision for yourself. I watched it. It looks pretty crazy. I mean, you see the collar come off the dog, and it's a little odd, but yeah, it's pretty cool. All right, so now let's get on with some out-of-this-world news. So the government recently released footage of a large metallic orb flying over Mosul, Iraq. This video was taken in 2016. This is the first footage that shows a UFO, or UAP, as the government likes to call them, in a conflict zone. The footage was captured by a U.S. spy plane, and it was included in a classified briefing video by the Pentagon's Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Task Force. It was shown to multiple U.S. government agencies. The metallic UAP was spotted moving from south to north, and it did not appear to descend. From studying the video, they have determined that it was definitely under intelligent control, and they've ruled out pretty much everything. And despite being analyzed for over 6 years, it still remains unidentified. I think we're getting closer, people. I think we're getting closer. All right, everybody. So I have a little surprise for you guys. Someone actually called 845-600-0744 and left me an awesome voicemail, which I encourage you guys to do so I can play it on the air. And, you know, we could have a great listen to your story and your paranormal experience. No judgment, of course. And so this one is actually from a woman named Rebecca Williamson, and she is the owner of Cambria House and Farm. Check this out. Listen to this voicemail. It's pretty awesome. And I'm probably going to have her as a guest as well. So yeah, here we go.
This is Rebecca Williamson. I'm the owner of Cambria House and Farm. And I wanted to tell you a quick ghost story. It's one of my favorites from out at the farm. So my son had been seen out there and it was snowing. And I asked him to go outside and take pictures of the house so I could have pictures of the house in the snow. And walked outside, took a quick picture of the home, went and got something from his vehicle. And when he turned around to go back to the house, there was a person standing at the corner of the building. And he thought it was a trespasser. The person looked at him, he looked at the person, and then the person ran away, like turned and ran around the corner of the house. And my son decided that he would get a flashlight out and go look for the tracks in the snow to follow the person and make sure the trespasser left the property. So when he comes back out with the flashlight, he walks to the corner of the building and sees nothing but an entire fresh layer of snow. There are no footprints anywhere in the yard. He was pretty freaked out. He called him back to say, don't do that again. that he was not too excited about staying out there and being sued. One of my other favorite stories from him spending the night out there, we were doing a live stream, a Facebook live stream of the farm, and we had it scheduled so that people could listen for ghosts, you know, and there was footsteps upstairs. And I'm watching it on the live stream and people are commenting going, is there somebody in the house? We hear somebody walking around. Now my son knew, and I told him not to walk around when the live stream started, but I thought, well, maybe it was him. So I texted him and I said, what are you doing? We're hearing footsteps. And he was downstairs on the couch with headphones on, listening to a movie, trying to be quiet. And in fact, the other thing was, it was boots. We were hearing boots and he didn't have his shoes on at all. It absolutely was not him. And then when he took his headphones off, he could hear the footsteps too. And he says, Mom, this is why I wear headphones when I listen to movies out here. Okay, those are a couple quick ones. Looking forward to talking to you. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Rebecca, for that awesome voicemail. And those stories sound pretty crazy, especially the one with the footsteps and all that, you know, upstairs. You know, that's pretty much a very common thing in haunted places. But yeah, thank you so much. I can't wait to hear more stories when you come on the show, which should be, you know, in the near future, of course. If you guys have any paranormal experiences you want to share about cryptids, UFO sightings, anything weird, time slips, anything like that, even weird dreams, I'll take some weird dreams or whatever. Give me a call, 845-600-0744, or leave me a voicemail at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. So now let's get into some Valentine's Day lore and the history of it, because it actually is very interesting. Some of the stuff that I was looking up, I really couldn't believe that something as crazy as the lore and the history of it could be associated with the holiday of love. So check it out. Let's talk about it, shall we? So in ancient Rome, February 13th to the 15th was considered a sacred time, as it was the festival of Lupercalia. During this festival, goats and dogs were slaughtered as sacrifices. After the sacrifices, priests would cut the goat's hide into strips, dip them in sacrificial blood, and head out to the streets of Rome to slap women with the bloody hides. This was welcomed by females as they believed it increased their fertility. The color red associated with Valentine's Day is often thought to come from the blood origins. Of course, the Roman men could never be subject to such a thing, so it was only performed on the women. The festival was believed to bring good health and fertility, and after years of torture, the women started to believe in this tradition, as it is being in good faith and that this was the way to become fertile. As the festival was ending, the women would have their names put into an urn. The men would pick a lucky lady's name out, and those two would be paired for a year to try to procreate. One of the most well-known origins of Saint Valentine was a priest under the reign of Emperor Claudius. The emperor thought that single men made much better soldiers and banned young people from getting married. Valentine married people in secret, which led to his imprisonment. But while he was imprisoned, Valentine fell in love with the daughter of one of his jailers. After some time, the priest was sentenced to a three-part execution, which involved being beaten, stoned, and then decapitated. He signed his last letter to his love with, "From your Valentine," which is where the centuries-long tradition likely began. So the Western Christian Church also announced that February 14th would be called St. Valentine's Day in honor of two early Christian martyrs that were both named Valentine and were both executed on the same day in different years of the 3rd century. Then a very intelligent pope decided to merge both of these affairs, and so it became a very discombobulated day of love and sadistic behavior. So now let's talk about Cupid. You see, he wasn't the cute baby with white wings and arrows of love that we all associate him with. Roman author Lucius Apuleius had birthed Cupid from his book of fables called The Golden Ass. You heard me right. You see, Cupid's mom, Venus, was jealous of a mortal girl named Psyche. who was way hotter than she was. Venus had told her son to shoot one of his flaming poisoned arrows into this woman and have her be attracted to the most undesirable wretched man around. So on the night of the arrowing, Cupid breaks into Psyche's house, but he was so encapsulated by her beauty that he accidentally pricked his own finger with the arrow, binding the two together forever. I bet their family's holidays with Mom Venus were fun. Cupid was actually like a sexual demon deviant who liked to shoot his arrows into people, making them have misplaced sexual urges and desires. What a dick. So with all of this being said, there are actually a ton of haunted attractions that have Valentine's Day events around the country. From the Bayville Vampire Valentines in Long Island, New York, to the All Saints Lunatic Asylum in Apple Valley, California, to My Bloody Valentine in Lubbock, Texas, and the Factory of Fear in Moline, Illinois, you and your love can have a spooky old time. So I know by this point, you guys are probably saying, when the hell is this guy going to just shut the hell up? So that's going to be right now. Here comes the segment Horrible Reviews with Edgegrave Dave, where he reviews My Bloody Valentine. Take it away, Dave.
Horrible Reviews with Edgegrave Dave. Roses are red, violets are blue. One is dead, and so are you. In other words, for the legend they say on the Valentine's Day, there's a curse that'll live on and on. Happy Valentine's Day, grave diggers. Time to dig up those heart-shaped chocolate boxes and pray that there's nothing but candy and chocolate inside. Because you never know if Harry Warden or any other maniac wearing a miner's mask is going to be carving out hearts and sticking them inside. What we're going to be discussing is, in case if you haven't guessed, is 1981's My Bloody Valentine, a holiday slasher extraordinaire. My Bloody Valentine is one of the early horror gems of the 1980s that followed suit with holiday-themed horror that was cultivated by the incredible landmark film Halloween and distributed by Paramount Pictures, who just not even a year had passed and they had put out the landmark, groundbreaking, and horror-shaping film Friday the 13th as well. So there were a lot of films at the time that were sort of just kind of churning out, and this is definitely one of the better ones. This is a Canadian film. It was directed by George Mohaka, screenplay by John Beard. It was starring Paul Kelman, Laurie Hallier, Neil Affleck, not to be confused with Ben Affleck, Don Franks, Cynthia Dale, Alf Humphreys, Keith Knight, Patricia Hamilton. And this came out February 14th. Ah, got you there. I actually thought that too. February 11th, 1981, running at 93 minutes. At this time, I am going to issue an Edgegrave warning, spoiler alert. Now, one of the things, guys, that we just can't overlook here is the amount of heavy censorship that was done to this movie. A total of 9 minutes was actually cut by the MPAA. Now, unfortunately, at this time, this was not entirely uncommon, as a lot of horror films did actually suffer from this. I mean, it did even happen in the 1990s and onward. One notable film that comes to mind almost immediately is 1988's Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood. Jason is supposed to whack this girl within a sleeping bag 6+ times. It was done with one, and you kind of see it real quick, and many other kills were actually taken out. But this movie, luckily, in 2009, we got a real treat. Lionsgate put out an uncut version of the movie, in addition to an awesome 3D remake, which that remake did come with 4 sets of 3D glasses in a purplish-green color. That's kind of an upgrade from the red and blue. Done very nicely, actually. I kind of, miss the older way of 3D, and that movie's pretty damn good, too. But in the original movie from 1981 that was re-put out uncut, you have all the 9 minutes as deleted scenes. And you also have an option to view the movie, in addition to standard, as the extended version, where each scene is inserted seamlessly in the movie. Now, you'll notice a little bit of texture in the graininess of the film, but it in no way takes away from the viewing experience. And that's my way of choice. So, getting on to the story, we have the lovely Canadian town of Valentine Bluffs. Valentine Bluffs. This is actually starting to sound like Jack Frost here, guys, where they had Snowminton. I mean, could the name be any more generic? But anyway, there was a terrible accident in the mine due to the methane gas levels that weren't checked by these two supervisors. Everybody died due to this explosion, and Harry Warden was the only survivor. And what he did the next year was he murdered them right on Valentine's Day, cutting out their hearts and placing them in Valentine candy boxes. For over 20 years, the dance had stopped. And that leads us to present day. You have such goofy cast of characters with these kids, and I love all of their accents, which sounds very kind of like New England, Canadian. They're just drinking beer, partying. They all want to kind of get it on. They don't care that there was a killer running around. And then all of a sudden, murders start happening, where the mayor and the police chief start receiving anonymous Valentine's chocolate boxes that have human hearts. There's all sorts of Valentine's notes going on, messages, the roses are red, violets are blue, and all these things are happening when you find out, could Harry Warden be back? Well, I'm not going to tell you. You just have to watch for yourself. While this is going on, the killer wears a mining outfit with a headlamp on the helmet. Everybody believes that it's Harry Warden that is back, and there's this love triangle going on with the two main characters, okay? This is TJ and Axel. Now, I do want to kind of warn you that what you're going to see with the extended version, that might not be for the faint of heart, literally. But speaking of hearts, guys, upon watching this movie, one of the things that I noticed, there are hearts everywhere. There are more freaking paper decorated hearts than Christmas lights and Christmas decorations during Christmas. I mean, this town literally puts hearts everywhere. They plaster the stores. It's all over the signs. There's ribbons on the street, you know, that go from one light post to the other. I mean, it's just crazy. I certainly noticed that. I found that it was really funny, as if somebody robbed like two Costco's, a Walmart, and a Target and bought every single freaking Valentine's decoration that there was. So they must have done really, really well that year. Now, people that believe that Harry Warden is back are frantically afraid of him, and nobody can seem to stop the killer. I mean, it's really quite something. Almost nothing that you do. Most of the kills that I've seen here are done with a pickaxe, and they're just terrible at stopping him until the climax, where I actually saw a knife come out, and this is pretty exciting. It was actually a nice change. But make no mistake about it, there's quite a few different kills here. I sort of love the whole laundry machine where the woman inside is just spinning around like a freaking kebab, just going around. Oh, man. That's just awesome. So I think that you're really going to like it. This is one of those reviews where I really don't want to give too much away because I don't want to ruin anything for you. You'll find out exactly who the killer is, all the campy dialogue, the one goofy clown guy. There's one of them in almost every movie, guys. And let's not forget about the Darth Vader-esque heavy breathing. I mean, when you look at the helmet and he's kind of like turned to the side and he's like, it's like, Luke, I am going to kill you. Well, that never actually happened, but I rate this one an actual 3.5 out of 5 Bloody Graves. It was pretty ambitious for its day. I would definitely check out the uncut version so you can see the ambitiousness and have a lovely day. I love you, Ghost Joe. Back to you, buddy.
Thank you so much for that awesome, horrible review, Edgegrave. And I love you too, my friend. So, I know, you know, the whole movie review thing is Edgegrave Dave's thing now, but those of you that don't know, I've been on this, found footage journey, the past few months or the past year. I've seen about 35 to 40 found footage movies as of now. I did end up watching two new ones that I haven't seen ever, not new, but new for me. One is called Apollo 18. Very, very good movie. I'm not giving anything away. It's not really a review, but just check it out. Apollo 18, very cool movie. But the one that I watched that I really, really enjoyed was Troll Hunter. If you want a really good found footage movie, and it's found footage, but not really, it's like loosely found footage, but that movie is awesome. You can find it on Tubi also, so it's free, and it's an awesome, very cool movie. So check that out. I just wanted to throw that out there since we're talking about movies. Now, on to the next thing. All right. So now let's talk some I Read It on Reddit. And this one is entitled, I Just Wanted to Say Thank You. I work armed security in Colorado Springs, and a few months ago, a contract ended that we had for a couple of years. The contract was overnight from front desk and building monitoring for a community transitional apartment building, or more simply, a stepping stone apartment building for working homeless waiting for public assisted housing. I hadn't worked this location since last summer, 2021, and the contract ended early 2022. Primarily, we were hired because overnight, some people caused trouble, be it homeless from the shelter next door, less than deserving tenants conducting illegal business, or standard issues involving apartment buildings. Security was limited on what we were able to handle, as the building was ran by the shelter and leasing was through DHS and the state. I asked to be pulled after a 2-month rotation working there twice a week because, hey, staring at a camera and walking a small 4-story building for 12 hours at a time is boring. Now to the meat and potatoes of the post. While working there, I got to know a really cool older guy named David. David was a veteran that ended up getting caught up in drugs and alcohol when he got out of the military in the late 80s. Though he was homeless for most of his adult life, David never asked for any handouts, but instead worked off any debt he felt needed. Even though David was clean from drugs and alcohol for over a decade when I met him, he was suffering from that lifestyle in his old age. But despite his failing health, David got a job working at a deli that's located at one of my company's overnight patrol services properties. A few weeks ago, as I was checking the shopping center where that deli is located, I noticed light on inside the deli and the dumpster behind the store had movement. I checked it out to find David standing next to the trash bags smoking a cigarette. After a brief friendly chat catching up, I told David I had to get back on the road, but would be back later in the night. Happily, he acknowledged, but asked if I could do him a favor and bring him a fresh pack of Newport Reds, as he would be there for a while. I agreed, as he said, I just wanted to say thank you for being kind to me. 2 hours later, I returned with the cigarettes and a gas station fruit pie. I love those things. As I come behind his deli, I saw a food delivery truck and a couple of his co-workers unloading. I parked and walked up to them, asking if David was still there. Confused, the men replied that David was dead. Upset, I replied that wasn't funny, but the men said seriously that David died just after Valentine's Day, on his way home from his shift at the deli from a heart attack. Not believing what the men were saying, I stopped at the transitional apartment building on my way to another property to drop off the cigarettes. At the front desk, the new security confirmed what the men at the deli said. The new security then stated that since he had no next of kin or a will, his apartment was just emptied earlier that week. It's now been about 5 weeks since I saw David at that dumpster, and whenever I'm working patrol on that side of town, I stop and have a smoke with my old friend, even if I can't see him anymore. See, guys, Ghost Joe does have a soft side. It's not all about demons and heads exploding. It's about love. All right, enough of this sappy stuff. Let's get back to the scary stuff.
Now it's time for Tiny Terrifying Tales.
An Ode to My Love, written and narrated by Ghost Joe. I've watched you for years. You thought we'd just met. The scent of your hair, I won't soon forget. your past loves, whom you thought had just gone. I knew they wouldn't last, so I helped them along. They begged and pleaded, please let me go. Fed them to the rats, nothing left to show. I'll tug at your heartstrings, rip them through your chest. The taste of your heart was better than the rest. You see, I'm your one and only, believe me or not. Together we lie there, our bodies left to rot. Well, I hope you enjoyed that lovely, lovely poem that I had written for Valentine's Day. Now, let's check in with Chris Whitehouse of the White House Investigation Team and find out what he's up to.
In this episode, I want to play you a clip from our return to York. We were back at Sam's house, and Sam had warned us not to return and had followed us around the UK whenever we investigated, showing he was listening and pushing other spirits out of the way to warn us against going back. After our return to his house, we find ourselves on good terms with him, as we made peace with each other. But this clip is from before the Bridge of Trust was built. We sat around a Ouija board, trying to talk to him, and we hear slowest, loudest footsteps walking up a wall where there is no longer stairs. And the sound in the video, what you'll hear, is the sound from one device. Then I play it again from like two devices, as in two camcorders. Then I put them on top of each other for three devices, two cameras and an audio recorder, just so you get the full noise that we heard. But yeah, I really find myself being impressed with Sam, and that's kind of what we'd got to. We went in saying, you're so good, your evidence is so strong, so much better than other spirits. And a friendship of, well, an uneasy alliance, let's say, had been built. And hopefully going forward, we may be able to help each other, because we start investigating next week as I record this. We'll see whether Sam protects us or leaves us alone completely. So, enjoy this clip.
Sam, we thank you so much for allowing us into your house, if you were trying not to.
Yeah.
Nothing but respect. We want to leave here.
What was that?
That is a slow walk up the stairs. Why would you walk up there? That
was in this room.
That wall right there.
What was that? That. What was that? That.
Not stairs there. We agree that, right?
Well, there you go. I hope you like it. And now back to Joe.
Wow, so that was really something. That actually sounds like what Rebecca Williamson was describing in her voicemail as well, the footsteps from upstairs or just from in the general area. That's quite frightening, but it's a pretty amazing sign at that. Yeah, also, guys, you know, you could hear about a lot of Chris Whitehouse's experiences as a ghost hunter if you buy his book, Into the Darkness, Becoming a Ghost Hunter. It's off of Amazon. It's only $8. Go buy it. It's awesome. He's awesome. And check it out. All right, guys. Now on to some cryptids. Normally, I call it Cryptid Zoo, but I think I want to change that, actually. I see that there's a website called Cryptid Zoo, and I don't know. I just feel like it could use a little bit of a change in the name. So if you have any suggestions, please, ghostjoeny@gmail.com. Or actually, you could give me a review on Apple Podcasts and put the little suggestion in there. That would be amazing. So I've actually picked two cryptids for this week. I usually always try to find the scariest or creepiest cryptids for the show, but it's the Valentine's special, so I figured I would cover a couple less dangerous ones. The first cryptid we're going to explore is one of the most mythical and most popular amongst children. I'm talking, of course, about the magical, mystical unicorn. Okay, so the unicorn is said to be a white horse or goat-like creature with a long, single horn measuring approximately 28 inches or 700 millimeters, protruding from the front of its head, the forehead. The mythical description also describes it as having wings. In most cultures, it's said to hold healing powers and can cure poisonous properties. Many different cultures have their own idea of the unicorn. The Greeks wrote of unicorns in their natural history, not their Greek mythology, but their natural history, claiming that they were found in ancient Persia. The unicorn is even mentioned in the Bible multiple times. Even the great Leonardo da Vinci had wrote about them. Many physicians would make medicines and powders made from alicorn, which was the substance the unicorn horns were made of, as early as the 1600s. Most of the time, it was actually tusks from narwhals and walruses, though, which are not magical in the slightest, right? There have been some recent sightings of unicorns, though, one of which was in Scotland in 2014, to a sighting in Northern Maryland and Uzbekistan. Now, there are many instances of goats being spotted with genetic disorders where a horn grows out of their forehead, giving them a unicorn-like appearance. But scientists recently discovered that around 30,000 years ago, unicorns did exist, but not in the appearance that we're used to. They more resemble a large, hairy rhino than the beautiful spiral-horned majesty. It was said to be about 9,000 pounds, 6 feet tall, and 15 feet long. Scientists had discovered a skull with these characteristics in Kazakhstan. Why can't I say that? They dubbed the animal the Siberian unicorn. They are still baffled, as earlier studies had shown that these giant hairy beasts had gone extinct nearly 350,000 years ago. I'm going to link some of the recent videos of unicorn sightings in the show notes. The one that was in Scotland was actually on one of those, you know, paranormal caught on tape things. And it's pretty amazing. I mean, I don't like to say, oh, that's fake, that's fake. It most likely probably is, but it's pretty amazing at that. So the next cryptid is just as mythical, but this one lives in the water. That's right. Let's talk about mermaids. So like unicorns, the real life mermaids, which people have claimed to have witnessed, aren't the beautiful maidens that we are accustomed to. In fact, it's said that many people have confused manatees with mermaids. One of the most famous sightings was a reported sighting made by none other than Christopher Columbus in January of 1493, only 6 months after he, quote unquote, discovered America. He claimed to see three mermaids while sailing near the Dominican Republic. He described them as not half as beautiful as painted. The history of mermaids actually dates back to ancient Greek times, depicted as having a woman's head and torso and having a fish tail instead of legs. Mermaids live in the ocean and, according to some legends, can take on a human shape and marry mortal men. Don't confuse these mermaids with sirens, though. Although both are half sea creature and half woman, the lore of sirens is that they are evil and that they lure sailors with their beautiful voices to their deaths or to sink their ships. The first case that we know of about witnessing mermaids was by Pliny the Elder in 77 AD. He claims to have had numerous sightings of mermaids' scaled covered bodies, which some were found washed up on the beaches. But many think he may have just been seeing seals. Blackbeard the pirate claimed to have seen mermaids, as well as the explorer Henry Hudson. Many of the people that have claimed to have seen mermaids are usually frightened, as in many cultures, it's said to be bad luck to witness one. In 1967, a mermaid was spotted in Victoria, Canada by passengers on a ferry boat. They described her as being very attractive, with long blonde hair, dimples, and she was topless. As they looked on, she obliviously was eating raw salmon while sitting on some rocks. Local newspapers even offered $25,000 to anyone who captures her. 10 scuba divers claimed to have seen a mermaid swimming with a pod of dolphins in Hawaii in 1998. And in 2009, some people claimed to have seen what looked like a young girl with a fishtail jumping within the waters of Haifa Bay in Israel. The allure of mermaids is quite amazing. I can't see all of these people mistaking a giant manatee or a seal for a mermaid, though. There's got to be some truth to the claims, right? I remember seeing a video on one of those caught-on-tape shows where they supposedly caught one hitting their submarine or something like that. I'll try to find a clip and put it in the show notes. By the way, the brand Chicken of the Sea, which is the ones that, you know, sell canned tuna, is offering $1 million to anyone who can get a real picture of a real mermaid. So, happy hunting. All right, everybody. So now it's time for everyone's favorite segment, Haunted eBay. Yes, that's right. Haunted eBay. So the first item that I'd like to talk about is demonic, satanic, haunted doll in mausoleum. It goes for $122.50, and the shipping is $14.06, and it's coming all the way from Drake's Branch, Virginia. So let's read the description. So this one is pretty interesting. It's a long description. So here we go. It says, extremely dangerous. Demonic bound entity goes by the name of Cordelia. I have had some very disturbing sessions with her. She is a higher demonic entity and emits a very unique smell. The glass on her cage, on her case is frosted in the front. Her mausoleum is able to be opened as she has not been bound, she has been bound by the doll. She must never be removed from the mausoleum and recommend never leaving it open. She loves to laugh in a very creepy way, and you will hear it from time to time. This item will not sit well with someone who enjoys light, as she prefers the darkness. I recommend starting out with a pendulum and two candles for your first attempt at contacting her. As she is a servant of Lucifer, she will require you to demand her to speak with you. These entities will prey on the weak, and manipulative behavior can result in chaos in one's life if one falls for it. Never trust the entity, as she has no good intentions. I purchased a huge lot of occult items from an estate sale over 2 years ago from an old woman named Beverly in her late 70s, moving back to Romania, where she was born and raised after losing her husband. She was uncertain as what to do with the huge collection of items she and her husband had accumulated. I have always been drawn to paranormal occult ritual items. I have had a lot of good experiences with the items as well as horrific experiences. I remember picking up a box containing the Devil's Dollhouse and some other items when I first met Beverly at her estate sale. When I approached Beverly, she immediately grabbed the box away and in a very stern voice said, "That box isn't for sale." Then why is it out there? "Where did you get that?" I replied by telling her it was laying next to her storage building and I was very interested in it. I was walking away so disappointed when she yelled for me to come back and explain why I would try and purchase such an evil box of items, all while grinning and laughing. I was so puzzled as to what was going on and replied, "I'm not actually sure." My first impression of Beverly was she was old and not in her right mind, and to just overlook her. She told me the price, and I agreed, grabbed the box, paid, and left. Several days later, I found myself returning to her home and asking what was behind the item, as some horrible things were happening in my house. She invited me in and told me the gentle version of the actual story of the items I had taken home. She informed me that her and her husband were heavily involved in the occult, and that the items had demonic entities, tortured damned souls, and incantations of very powerful demons. I didn't know what to say. She asked me if I was scared, and I quickly answered, somewhat. She told me to follow her out to her shed, and I did just that. Why would you follow a creepy old lady out to her shed? It just reminds me of Drag Me to Hell, you know, like that creepy old lady from Drag Me to Hell. Yeah. When she opened the shed door, I felt fear like no other in my life, but at the same time, such an attraction to the shed's contents. As we approached the stacks of boxes, she asked if I would be willing to purchase her entire collection. Without even thinking about it, I agreed. We had many long-distance chats over the years about almost every item before her passing in March of 2022. Rest in peace. Rest in peace, Beverly. Our last time talking before she passed was a very different conversation. She told me her husband was actually a high-ranking satanic member, and some of the items I had gotten from her needed to be rehomed to people that understood the dangers and could overcome the chance of demonic possession since they were tied to the occult. Beverly was a different kind of person and taught me more than I'd ever imagined and showed me things most don't believe in. But I am here to tell you these items are real, unlike many others on eBay. I warn you now, as I had to learn a very hard lesson. Using a pendulum is okay. Under no circumstance should you use a Ouija board to contact the entities. Under no circumstances should you ever leave the items out for others to play with or touch. You never trust or try to release the entities. They aren't going to be friendly if you do. Many of these items I'm selling aren't kept in my house due to my fear of them and the horror they create when I'm around them. Most of the demonic entities have been bound to the items unwillingly. I have a local oddity shop that I use to look over the items before I list them. The owner makes me an offer of what he will pay, and I start my auctions off there. I feel this is the best way for me and the items. I personally just want the items in their correct homes, and I feel this way they will go where they are desired. Very rarely will I sell something straight out unless I feel you're the chosen one. Wow. So that's really, really creepy. And if you look at this picture, it's pretty creepy as well, like what the doll looks like in the mausoleum. It's pretty crazy. I honestly kind of believe this person, even though it was extremely difficult to read the description, because use punctuation, people. When you're listing something on eBay, please use punctuation, because I'll just keep reading as if there's no commas. If there are no commas, I'm just going to keep reading. And it sounds crazy. I try to read it properly, but sometimes it doesn't really work out that way. So please, people, punctuation is key. All right, guys. So do I have a treat for you for this next item? You're going to love this one. Ready? Let's check this out. Haunted Genie Lamp, the genie of the core. And this one goes for a cheap price of $100,000. But, the shipping is free. So, hey, let's read the description of this $100,000 genie lamp. Behold, the lamp of the genie of the core. Greetings. I am a haunted jeweler, and I enjoy, I don't know why I stuttered like that, and I enjoy collecting haunted items from all over the world and selling them on eBay. The haunted genie lamp of the genie of the core came from an ancient tunnel in Cornwall in England, and where it was found by an explorer and is haunted by a genie named Coran that grants all wishes. It was fall of 2019. An explorer named Raven journeyed to Cornwall, England to explore its infamous ancient tunnels, and she brought plenty of flashlights, batteries, and rations so that she could explore as much of such tunnels as possible. She explored the ancient tunnels for most of the day, and then suddenly she fell through a loose part of the tunnel floor. As she landed below, her flashlight broke and she could not see nor find her satchel of supplies. All was complete darkness, and she could not even see her hand in front of her face. Then suddenly, after her eyes adjusted, further down the tunnel she saw a faint glimmering light. She then walked to the light, while thinking such a light led to a way out of the ancient tunnels. When she arrived at the light, she saw a flame that was within a wall. Raven then walked over to the wall, and there before her was an object levitating above such a flame. She then moved closer to the flame and grabbed the object, and an amazing lamp was revealed. Then, as she gazed at the lamp, the gem of such a lamp glowed red. A fire-like mist emerged, and an amazing being of fire-like plasma appeared. I am Coran, genie of the Earth's core. You are the first to find me since the gods created my lamp and placed me above the sacred core flame to await my new master. You are my new master now, and you shall have unlimited wishes. To make your wishes, rub my lamp 3 times, and then make your wishes, said the genie Karan. The genie Karan then returned to the lamp. Raven was amazed. She then rubbed the lamp 3 times and wished herself back outside of the ancient tunnels, and it was so. Then, after she arrived back outside of the ancient tunnels, she made many more wishes with the lamp, and they all came true. See, the genie Karan emerged from the lamp of Genie of the Core after I rubbed such a lamp 3 times and make my wishes. I have made many wishes with this lamp of the genie of the core, and they all came true. Thus, the new owner of this lamp will become the new master of the genie Karan and will have unlimited wishes. So don't delay, purchase this lamp of the genie of the core and have all of your wishes granted today. Huh. Oh, and by the way, if you're going to buy this for $100,000 and it doesn't work, there are no refunds. Okay, so just so you know. Yeah, I wish, yeah, I got nothing. All right, on to the next item. And the last and final item on Haunted eBay is Spirit Connection Haunted Phone. All right, so the Haunted Telephone was actually featured on the reality TV show My Ghost Story, caught on camera in the year 2013. And the price is a staggering $7,500 for this phone that looks like it's from the 1980s. Now, maybe the 1990s. It's one of those slim, thin phones that, you know, you push button and, you know, like you used to have, we all used to have in our bedrooms when we first got phones. So, yeah, it's going for $7,500 and the shipping is $7.87 from Ormond Beach, Florida. So let's get on with the description. Haunted phone featured on the reality TV show My Ghost Story Caught on Camera. My paranormal story began when I bought an old-fashioned landline phone. Not old-fashioned. So I would have a working phone line in the event of a power outage. Yeah, okay. I found the perfect phone too. One relying on 4 batteries for power and needing a phone jack for a dial tone. Starting in 2008, there were a number of occasions where I could have sworn I heard the phone ringing in my house. Later, I realized no one had called. The first few times I wrote it off and thought to myself, it must have been something else I heard. But if that were the case, what was it? I know I heard it ringing, so what's going on? One day in 2010, I ran out of batteries for my camera, so I took the batteries out of my phone and unplugged it. Then I set the phone down on my dresser in my guest bedroom and forgot about it. Another month passed. A friend came to stay with me while I recovered from an operation. In the middle of the night, I heard her crying out to me, "Answer the phone!" I got up and rushed to my guest bedroom. I approached the doorway and soon found myself taking a step back. Before me, I saw a soft white mist hovering above the phone. Despite the mist, I was calm as I moved forward and grabbed the phone. I remember it felt like a soothing, cool blanket wrapping around my head and shoulders when I picked the device up. The phone continued to ring, then a faint crackling noise filled my ear when listening into the receiver. I know not much time passed as I listened to the crackling, but it seemed like an eternity. As the mist lifted, the phone went silent. No sooner had the phone been placed on the dresser than the television in the living room turned on and off without anyone touching it. Anyone physical, that is, not anyone living. I scooped up the phone and safely stored it into my barn. Later, I made the decision to conduct my own paranormal experiment using a camcorder. I started recording the antiquated phone, which was unplugged on my dresser without batteries in it. For a few months, I continued to record the disconnected phone. Then, it happened. I recorded the unplugged telephone ringing. Shortly thereafter, a paranormal investigation team visited my farm and conducted an in-depth investigation. I was amazed by some of the evidence the team collected. The investigators actually managed to record bone-chilling EVPs, electronic voice phenomenon, while in the house. The team captured some remarkable film footage as well, with orbs darting by me while I was sitting on my couch in bed. After all the evidence was collected and the team's findings supported my own, I decided to submit my story in 2012 to a popular television show, My Ghost Story, Caught on Camera. A show was created based on my story entitled The Ghost Man Always Rings Twice, and it was episode 69 of season 6. My episode aired in August of 2013. The paranormal experiences with my phone left me to wonder if someone or something was trying to communicate with me. What would happen if you bought my phone? Along with the actual phone, case not included, you get a signed printout of an article I wrote about my paranormal phone and links to the episode of My Ghost Story Caught on Camera, so you can watch the show. Wow. So that's pretty crazy, and I guess it has some validation there too, being on TV. And yeah, so if you want to buy a 1990s phone for $7,500 that rings on its own, go for it. Ghost Joe and the Warped Reality Podcast are not responsible if you purchase any of these items and something does or does not happen paranormal. But yeah, if you want to buy any of them, or if you've ever bought any haunted items and you've had some experiences, please, please give me a call at 845-600-0744 and let me know about it. You could email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You could do it anonymously as well. So, you know, you don't have to be self-conscious of me using your name or anything like that. And I promise there's no judgment here, because listen, if it's your truth, it's my truth. So that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Warped Reality Podcast. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I hope you guys learned something about Valentine's Day. And thank you very much to Rebecca Williamson for that awesome, awesome voicemail. I can't wait to have you on the show. Thank you to Edgegrave Dave for your awesome review, and Chris Whitehouse of the Whitehouse Investigation Team. Please check out his stuff as well. I have all of the links for everything of his in my show notes at all times. So please check that out. His team is awesome. They do some amazing investigations. So on the next episode of the Warped Reality Podcast, by the way, it's premiering on February 24th. We're going to go through all of our regular segments that we normally do, and we may be debuting a brand new segment that I am extremely excited about by a friend of mine that was on the show previously. And he's amazing. He is very, very informative, very knowledgeable, and very entertaining as well. So you're going to love it, I'm sure. And please stay tuned for that. I may even make his first segment a bonus episode. So we'll have to see about that. Please check it out. Also, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. That would be greatly appreciated. It's amazing if you do that, because it gets my podcast out there to more people. You know, and if you have friends that like the paranormal stuff and this and that, please, please let them know about my podcast. I would greatly appreciate that as well. So that's it, everybody. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great week. Stay spooky.
Thank you for listening to the Warped Reality Podcast, and thank you to all my guests and contributors that helped make this show possible. For more episodes, guest info, social media links, merch, and more, please check out warpedrealitypodcast.com. If you have a paranormal experience you would like to share, questions, comments, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please leave me a voicemail at 845-600-0744, or you can email me at ghostjoeny@gmail.com. You can do so anonymously if you'd like. Also, I'd greatly appreciate it if you could leave me a review on Apple Podcasts or WarpRealityPodcast.com. Have a great night, everyone, and don't forget to change your shorts.